Hi everyone, and welcome to the TL Podcast. This is where you can learn, grow, and be inspired by some of the most influential leaders in their field. Because the first step to a better tomorrow is taking action today. I'm your host, Thomas Le Hoang, and thank you for tuning in. You have to resist taking the monkey off their back onto your back, but isn't that maybe a fault to a lot of leaders who try to apply compassionate leadership, that in the end they may carry a lot of people's burden?
And that's a really good distinction, Thomas, between empathy and compassion. And when we look at it, sometimes people get confused and think compassion is about being nice. Compassion is about saying yes. Compassion is soft and fluffy. It's entirely the opposite. Let me just quickly explain. If I'm trying to empathize with you, we hear people say empathizing is I'm feeling your pain and this sort of stuff. And I physically can never feel your pain, by the way. All I can do is try and imagine it. But the danger with empathy is that what I'm doing, I'm looking at whatever emotion you're holding and I'm trying to replicate the same emotion. So it's a positive to that. If you're a really happy person, Thomas, in a great space and I'm being empathetic, well, chances are I'm happy too. But if you're in a bad place and I'm empathizing, then it takes me into a bad place too. Mm-hmm. And so the emotions can actually drain the leader. What also happens is that the leader's response, if it's deeply focused on empathy, is driven by their own emotional need. And it may not be the need that's required. So let's just analyze the difference between empathy and compassion. So compassion starts with empathy, which starts with the understanding. But I'm not trying to take or replicate what it is that you do. All I'm trying to do is understand. So, Thomas, you're in a really great place. Okay, I'm understanding that. Or, Thomas, actually, I can see that you're frightened or you're not well, or you've spoken to me about that you're quite upset by something. Okay, I see that. I understand it. I'm not trying to feel it now because I'm compassionate. I am now driven to essentially help you take away that pain. I'm not going to take it on board myself. And that's the difference between empathy and compassion. But recognizing the place you're in, I'm going to drop all my judgment. I'm going to drop my own preferences and biases and act with positive intent on what I hear. So compassion tends to feed you emotionally, where empathy can actually drain you emotionally. And so the monkey off your back bit tends to be more empathetic response. That, oh, let me carry your pain. I'll carry your burden. Thomas, I'm with you. Where a compassionate response is, your monkey ship, mate. You've got it. But what I'll do, I'm going to help you carry it. Or I'm going to help you flick it off your back, whatever it may be. But it's not my monkey. Does that make sense? The difference?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That beautiful explanation. Now, let's leave now the start. So I'm sure that you celebrate with the team. We're starting. Everything's fantastic. It's always hunky-dory before you hit that storm. Yeah. I think that when it took you 3 days to come out first. But What were the first sign that you have on the boat that in a small business we also should pay attention to as first sign of discordance?
Oh, nice one. One of the things we did, and maybe it was a luxury compared to a small business, was that before the race started, we spent a lot of time, as much as we could, because my crew came from all over the world, and I only got the whole crew together the day before the race started. But we spent a lot of time trying to understand each other. So I spent a lot of time investing a lot of time with each individual, just trying to deeply understand what it was that person was about, a bit about their character, their motivation, their need, why they're doing this particular race. We then tried to get the teams together to share with each other. So before we left, we had a strong sense of understanding and mutual support. Now, it was never perfect because people will share so much. And to begin with, we may well hold up barriers where we won't be as open as we will later in a stronger relationship. And so what we also did was agree ways of working. Now, you'd have heard companies talk about their company values and this sort of stuff, and they'll have it written on the wall behind them. They're very fine words, which may be integrity, honesty, openness, all that malarkey. Yeah. But they don't live it. And so it's meaningless. But we spent time thinking, how are we going to work together on the boat? What are the sort of simple rules we ought to look on? One of them was timeliness, for example. You imagine, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. You've been on a shift, on watch for 4 hours, and the person who had to relieve you is late. Now, what does that say? It's disrespectful to start with, and it causes tension. So we had a few basic rules which it didn't break. And we spent a lot of time to understand each other. But there were always times when things didn't quite happen properly. And so what we also did was enable people to try and sort it out themselves if they could. If not, then it would come to me. A little example, if I might bring it on, and early in the race too. There are different positions on the boat. And you can imagine on a boat, it's 72 foot long, which is a big boat in the marina. But trust me, middle of the ocean, 72 foot is very small indeed. But it's big enough that communication is quite hard. And the noise, as you can imagine, on a boat in a decent wind, in a storm with the waves, the wind, the ropes and the sails rattling. So we had one bit where one of the person was back in the cockpit, the back end of the boat, wanted somebody up near the mast to pull on a particular rope. And it was the professor by the mast. And it was a young lad who used to work as a stacking shelves for a supermarket in England called Sainsbury's. And his nickname was Tesco, which is a rival supermarket. And Tesco asked the professor, "Hey, professor, could you pull on this rope?" Nothing happened. And so he asked the professor again. And this time he raised his voice. Still nothing happened. Now you can sense that Tesco was slightly annoyed now. So now the third time he asked, you could hear the irritation in his voice. He said, "Professor, I need that rope pulled." And the professor just turned around and said, "I heard you first time." So I said, "Okay, right. So team, can we just stop there? What happened?" And I said, "So Tesco, what happened?" He said, "Well, the professor ignored me. And so it annoyed me." And I said, "Professor, what happened to you?" He said, "Well, I heard Tesco, but I was really busy. And so I was going to do it when I could." So I said, "Well, what was the problem?" All the problem was a breakdown in communication. If the professor had said to Tesco after the first shout, "Yep, I've got it, Tesco, let me just finish this first," all that tension would have gone. So what we did in that moment was use it as a coaching moment. So rather than me say, "Hey, Tesco, stop shouting, professor. Hey, professor, make sure you answer Tesco." We just said, "Well, how can we do that differently?" And actually, professor said, "Actually, good point. I should have acknowledged Tesco." And Tesco said, "You know what? I should have seen that he was busy. I can see there's so much going on there.
Nice.
I should have calmed down." And we did it as a team. Now, this is a tricky thing, right? Let's say I'm running a small business and I'm very, very busy. And there's customers, there's things to do, there's orders, there's paperwork. There's always things to do. The danger is we're so busy, we do not make the most of those coaching moments. All that would happen, if let's say that was in a storeroom and Tesco had asked Professor to hand him something and it created a tension and there would have been an argument and a fight and it wouldn't have got better. They would work together less well the next time. There'll be that feeling in the storeroom with other people thinking, "Oh, crumbs, there's a bit of anger there." But because I stopped, literally only for a few minutes, and actually made it a coaching moment, we now had a new way of operating. People acknowledged communication. People looked at other person's priorities, and it actually helped it all the time. So as a leader, all I'd encourage is you're never, ever too busy to stop to do a coaching moment if something's particularly happening there and then. I used to coach junior rugby, and rather than taking kids through drills, we said, "Let's play." And if something went wrong in the play, we'd stop in the play, coach it, and carry on. It's the same as a small business. What we need to do is make sure that we have the awareness as a leader and the confidence to say, "Stop. Stop, team. 3 minutes. Come in. What happened? Right. What can we do differently?" And then it moves on. It's such a powerful way of doing it, Thomas.
Yeah, I can hear that. I can hear that what you're talking about is that small issues, especially on the boat where it's a life and death matter, small issues can poison relationships and communication. But in a small business, for example, like real estate, where what's at stake is my commission, and you now trying to make me compromise through compassion, and that means that I may have to lose part or all of the commission, people have got a different agenda now.
Yeah, okay. So this is an interesting point. So if we're trying to create a culture where we want this sense of a high-performing team, the important thing in a business is that our processes and our reward mechanism has to support the culture. So I worked before with industries where everybody is paid on their own separate commission. And the leader's telling me that I really want this team to work closer together. But they're not incentivized to work closer together. They're only incentivized. I mean, incentivized to get out there, push you to one side and grab the sell, sell, sell. You know, I'm going to get my commission because, hey, you know what? I may really, really need it. Excuse me. And so what we've got to make sure happens, that if we really want that strong sense of team, and even in real estate, and I'm working with a couple of sort of quite large global players now already, who also want to recognize the strength in greater collaboration, they've actually changed part of their commission structure. So yes, I still have my individual commission, but we have a concept of a joint reward, that as the business collectively goes well, there's a joint element that comes in. So I'm also now incentivize the processes, recognize and reward the collaboration, as well as recognize and reward my individual effort too. But it has to be aligned. We cannot, you know, if you like, demand a culture of one aspect, and then all our processes and reward mechanisms feed a completely different way of behaving. So that is a critical part of it. It's not just about the words and the culture and the intent. How do we enable it to happen too?
Right. Now, so we've already left. We've already confronted some challenges. We've already dealt with some issues. Now, what happens to people on the board in business who now disagree with your leadership or your decision then?
Well, that's easy. They just jump over the side. It's not a problem at all. I banned mutiny. So mutiny. That was one of the rules. Right at the beginning, team, no mutiny. Okay, so one of the things is about how we make decisions as a leader. I was a captain, and that was clear. But I didn't want to own every decision, because if I owned every decision, I would have to be omnipresent. I wouldn't be able to sleep. I wouldn't be able to get my head down. I wouldn't be able to do one thing or the other. And if I owned every decision, my team will own nothing. And there's an element in my book where I talk about the difference in commitment and compliance, is that if I'm a person who's hugely controlling, everything's got to come back to me, then, you know, and there's, if I draw a graph, and there's two axes. This is time on the bottom here, and this is my effort I've got to put in. But I'm in control. It's command and control. I'm the expert. I've been in real estate for 30 years. I know more than you. So what it is, right, it's going to take a certain amount of effort to get them going. And because I own everything, they don't own everything. They're not going to take their initiative. They're not going to make decisions. It's got to come back to me. My supervision, my effort increases over time. So I'm getting busier and busier and busier.
Yeah.
I'm having to take on more and more. There's also a flaw, right? I've only had one experience in life. But if I've got a team of 20 people, there's 21 experiences in life, mine and theirs. And who's to say that just because I'm an old crusty that I ever got it right? I may have been successful, but are there better ways of doing it? I've got a lovely little story around that, around a guy called Tesco. I'll tell you in a minute. So rather than me doing this command and control bit, how about early on, I try and share a sense of purpose, a sense of meaning. I try and delegate as much as I can to help people grow. A good example might be in the race start.
Yep.
So the start of every race, and for the people who aren't sailors, you've got two boys, buoys, if you're American, not sure. The Aussies, do they boys or buoys in Aussie? I don't know.
Boys.
I remember. Two floating boys in the water. There's an imaginary line between the two.
Yep.
And you've got to be behind the line. And when the starting gun goes, you cross the line.
Yes. Yep.
Now, there's always a bias to the line. So one end of the line is better than the other. So what you have 12 72-foot, 20-ton steel yachts, all trying to be in exactly the same place at the same time at full speed. So the potential getting it wrong is extraordinary. Right, so let's think about it, right? So the person on the wheel has got to be good. There's only one professional sailor on the boat, and that's me, the skipper. So logic says, skipper, you're on the wheel. That's wrong. It's wrong. Because if I'm on the wheel, and this is the fundamental difference, if I'm on the wheel, if something happens at the front of the boat, I can't go and help. If I'm on the wheel, who's checking the navigation?
Wow.
If I'm on the wheel, who's checking the weather? Who's checking the opposition? Who's doing the tactics and the strategy? And also, if I'm on the wheel, where's the legacy? Who's learning? So at the start of the race, and I think my boat was unique in that, we always had excellent, excellent starts, which is nice, but as you know, you get scored on your finishes, not your starts. I had one of my other crew on the wheel.
Yep.
And we had a good communication. So they understood, you know, left, right, what I wanted. But that gave, let me free to lead. And this is a real challenge for all leaders. And this is a beautiful challenge. Don't do the job you can do. Do the job you should do. Now, as a leader, and Thomas, you may be hugely experienced in real estate. You could get out there and you could close a deal. You can get it all sorted. But then if you're doing that, if your head is down, whose head is up? Who's looking ahead? Who's doing the leadership? Who's doing the strategy? Who's helping that team grow? And this is one of the challenges for leaders, particularly if they're leading in a field that they know well. So in your industry, for example, invariably you get to the top because you've been doing it for many, many years. So you know it well. And the temptation is, as a leader, you think, I'm going to make the decisions. I'm going to make sure it all happens. I'll sort them out. I'll command and control. Wrong, because you're limited. So don't do the job you can do. Do the job you should be doing.
Wow.
And as a leader, that's the leadership. That's the strategy. That's the compassion to your team. That's the legacy. That's the training. It's the bigger relationships. It's the more ambassador role. It might be the investors. And if your head is down, no one else is doing that.
Do you question it that maybe you're leading a pack and you their lives in your hands, where in a small business like real estate, we leading a small pack, and what's in danger, what's at stake is my mortgage?
Yes, it is. So yes, it's not just your life. And actually, good point. So their life is in my hands, but my life is also in their hands, by definition, is true. So the level of trust on a boat is enormous. So let's take it to a real estate business. Your success is actually the success of all the people who are working with you and for you. It's your ultimate success.
Yes.
If they're failing, or if they're a bunch of numpties, or they're not cracking the deal, then actually that isn't success for you. Likewise, their success is tapping into your experience, into your knowledge, into your leadership, and you're helping them grow. So what we need to look at is the principle of mutual success. I'm not the owner. I'm just trying to beat them up and squeeze as much out of them as possible and then discard this empty husk of a human on the wayside as a broken person. I could do that, and that leadership exists without any doubt at all. And I see it in industry. But it's much better, and much more sustainable, much more long-term, and actually much more enjoyable that actually if I feed the person rather than empty the person. Because actually, guess what? The pot's going to get bigger then. We're going to do much better. And in the joy of looking at their success, my success will come. I once met this lovely chap who wasn't sure what to do at the end of university. And a friend of his had an idea. And so this chap said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to help your idea be successful. And I don't want any money, but give me whatever shares or whatever you think is right. And he says, I'm going to make you a millionaire. And what he then decided, you know what? That's my purpose in life. I'm going to make other people millionaires. As a result, he's an older gentleman now who is quite clearly a billionaire, having made hundreds of people millionaires in their own right. And every time he's never said to them, I demand X, I want this. He just said, you share with me whatever you want to share, but my success is your success. And I love that attitude.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
That's deeply compassionate, isn't it? Understanding with positive action. And the danger is sometimes, Thomas, on that one, that we get so focused on our own outcome, what we want to achieve, that we forget about helping other people in their path. And one of the beauties of compassion, I mentioned earlier, that empathy can drain you, compassion can feed you, because you're trying to do good to other people or other situations. If ever you're in a bad space yourself, or you're feeling low, or you're feeling miserable and depressed, whatever it may be, unmotivated, my encouragement is go off and do something good. Even it means, right, you know, I'm really low, my business is failing, I've got no money, I've got no time, my family are annoyed with me, my dog even hates me. And you know what I'm going to do? On Monday, I'm going to go and volunteer at a local shop, or I'm going to go and work in a soup kitchen. And I'm actually going to give more of my time, but to other people. And what we find then, there's so much research around this, by the act of compassion, which is towards others, feeds you. So you then end up in that positive mindset, that positive spirit. So as a business leader, if things aren't going right, the temptation is to bring in more and more controls. Oh, right, the business is failing. Right, I need to know, I need more reports. I need to know how many calls you're doing. I need to know how many this you're doing. I need to know that. I need more and more information, more data. And there's a lovely expression saying that you don't fatten a pig by measuring it. You actually have to feed the pig to make it fatter. And And the danger, Thomas, is that as the pig is struggling, all we do is keep measuring it. But what we've got to do as a leader when things aren't going right is the opposite. There's a counterintuitive bit. It's not more measures, it's more feeding. How can I help you grow? How can I help that happen more? How can we break this ice of the misery of what we're doing? Quick, let's go out and go and grab a meal together. Let's have a bit. Let's go for a walk. And let's just change the attitude into a positive one. Now, team, we're going really bad. It's the worst month we've ever had on record. So Monday, we're all going to go and work in a soup kitchen and just do something different and challenge the thinking. Because if it's the worst month on record, and guess what, team? Next month, we've got to do better. I'm going to put you under big pressure and I'm going to measure how many calls you do, how many responses you get, how many times you're out there, how many miles your car does. All you do is shrink it even further.
Yes, yes. I didn't know that on your board, there was a doctor and a vet.
Yes, exactly. Feeding the pig. Exactly. But it's an important point about compassion. And you're quite right. I mean, my book was published in 2014, and it was the first book ever on compassionate leadership. Now, as you know, the shelves are filling, which is a good thing because people are realizing actually it works. Because compassionate leadership is the route to commitment, and commitment is performance. So don't chase performance, work to gain commitment. And all these aspects of compassion sometimes may seem counterintuitive. They may seem, you know what, that's actually harder than I thought, because that means I've actually got to get to know Thomas well. I've got to invest my time and effort to understand not just the fact that, yeah, okay, can you sell, can you not sell, but why are you selling?
Thanks for listening to the TL Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode and want more inspiration like this, don't forget to subscribe. We'll see you in the next one.